And now, Virgin Most Powerful Radio is pleased to present Hands-On Apologetics with renowned Catholic author and apologist, Gary Matuta.
Welcome, everyone. Greetings. It's great to be back talking about apologetics. And you are listening to Hands-On Apologetics, Virgin Most Powerful's Apologetics Dojo. And where the rubber of catechesis meets the road of everyday life. We're having a load of fun this week. Some great guests in store for you, and hopefully some really good discussions as well. And it's just good to be here. And in fact, let me give you a little bit of a tease for today's program. 1 Corinthians 1:22 says that the Jews demand signs and Greeks look for wisdom. And you know what's really fascinating is converts from Judaism to Catholicism. You'll find some intellectual conversions, not very many, but some. Okay, where a Jewish person will actually kind of read themselves into the faith, more or less. But more often than not, it's usually Christ, extraordinary grace is given. You know, so when Paul writes in 1 Corinthians, Jews demand signs, you know, it's interesting how many conversions are through this grace, through signs, through dreams for many Jewish converts. The same, by the way, is true also for converts from Islam as well. Many of them are through extraordinary grace. And I'm pleased that a longtime friend of mine, I finally got him on the show. And trust me, folks, he's worth the wait, is a convert from Judaism to Catholicism. Roy Shulman's going to come into the dojo. He's going to share his journey into the Catholic faith. If you haven't heard Roy's story, you definitely need to listen, because I get goosebumps every time I hear it. It's just, if you think God is not working in your life, that God doesn't care, you need to listen to conversion stories, especially ones like Roy. So he's going to be joining us after the first break. We're also going to do the Finding the Fallacy. Finding the Fallacy for today is Marius Mercator. Marius Mercator. Again, not exactly a household name, but nevertheless, it's good to be familiar with all our brothers and sisters that came before us. And this is an interesting father, though we don't have a lot of biographical information. And the Finding of Fallacy, by the way, was proving too much. So I think I just skipped from Finding the Fallacy to Meet the Early Church Fathers. Proving too much, and Marius Mercator is going to be the Meet the Early Church Father for today. I tell you, it's just one of those days I can't seem to keep my head straight. Anyway, that's going to be a lot of fun. We'll do those exercises before the first break. Also, believe it or not, it's already less than a month before the dojo. Apologetics Dojo makes a road trip out west to the world headquarters of Virgin Most Powerful Radio. And so I'm going to do a couple of live shows in studio. So I get to, you know, sit, I guess, in the hallowed space of Virgin Most Powerful, where all the greats have done broadcast. I'm going to do a couple of interesting interviews there as well. And I'm also going to be giving a talk on February 20th at the historic Sacred Heart Chapel. And I invite all of you who live around Southern California to come out. It'd be great to see you. All my books are going to be there, including a book that is out of print. That's going to be available. So that's the only opportunity to pick it up. And also, hey, it's time also to give the shout out to those watching a live stream, both on Facebook and YouTube. Hello, everybody. It's great to see familiar names, you know, like Ricky and Jose and Navy 76 and Elizabeth and all you guys. You know, you are... You do not go unnoticed, although I can only peek at the chat room every now and then. But thank you. Thank you guys for that. Attending the live stream section of the dojo, your input's always valuable. So thank you for watching. I'm Jose. I'm excited too. Roy is awesome guy, awesome speaker if you ever have a chance to listen to him. For those who are maybe not watching on live stream but would like to call in with a question, join the conversation, the phone number is 888-526-2151. It's 888-526-2151. Or if you have questions that you would like answered, you can email us your questions at questions@handsonapologetics.com. That's questions@handsonapologetics.com, and the email goes straight into the dojo mailbox. I have a couple already in the mailbox. Maybe I'll be able to get to it Thursday, God willing. So if you've written a question or you share something via questions@handsonapologetics.com, thank you for your patience. You know, I have to kind of wait for them to accumulate a little bit. But I will get to you one way or another. All right, so it's that time again. Let's jump into our exercises because we need to keep our critical thinking skills sharp. And, you know, it's funny. The other day I was surfing around the web trying to get some good examples of fallacies. And it's funny how many non-believers, skeptics, sites all have fallacy sections. And not a lot of Catholic and Christians. Kind of strange because, you know, for me, that's kind of meat and potatoes because not only does critical thinking skills enable us to love Christ more, right, by clear thinking, but it also helps us to articulate our belief in Christ. So I love doing Finding the Fallacies. I hope you guys too. So the Finding the Fallacy for today is proving too much. And this fallacy, it kind of says it all in the title. It's whenever an argument reaches a conclusion in such a way that it not only supports the conclusion, but it supports multiple conclusions, including conclusions that are at odds with something that's known to be true or it contradicts premises of the argument. Okay, so in a sense, it happens when people give premises that are too broad, okay? It's not properly qualified or narrowed. And because the argument is so wide, it not only proves what they wanted to prove, but it also proves a lot of other things that are problematic. And like I said, usually with the definitions, it's a lot easier to understand a fallacy by the examples than the definitions. So here's a couple examples. Hopefully they're good ones. One is this. The argument, cars are evil because they add toxic fumes to the atmosphere. Okay. So there's the argument. Now, the problem is this proves too much because if adding toxic fumes to the atmosphere makes something evil, then human beings are evil because we too add toxic fumes, namely carbon dioxide, to the atmosphere. At least carbon dioxide is toxic if it's solely carbon dioxide. But as you can see, it's because it's such a wide argument, it actually entails some preposterous conclusions. Or how about this? All oral tradition is unreliable, therefore only written scripture is reliable. Well, the problem with that is if all oral tradition is reliable, then what do you do with the oral traditions that are inscripturated, you know? Because sacred scripture is essentially in the New Testament. You know, it came through oral tradition, and it was eventually written down. Now, if all oral tradition is unreliable, then guess what? Scripture is unreliable as well. Why? Because scripture is nothing but written oral tradition. So you see how that works. So it proves too much. And if it proves too much, therefore it's fallacious. So that's our Finding of the Fallacy for today. And hopefully that presentation didn't prove too much in the process. Okay, here is the Meet the Early Church Father. It's Marius Mercator. I kind of trip over it just because it's not an everyday thing. He flourished around AD 431. And in view of his relationship with Augustine, he's likely enough to have been born in Africa. Of course, you know, remember great Augustine of Hippo was also a bishop of this North African city. Later on, he lived in Rome, from where in 418 he sent Augustine two treaties that are no longer extant. They didn't survive the ages. And both of those treaties were against the Pelagians or Pelagianism. And we'll talk about that in a second. In 429 AD, we find him living in a Latin monastery in Thrace, where he wrote a number of works opposing not only Pelagianism, but also Nestorianism, largely for the benefit of his fellow monks. So besides composing numerous writings of his own, he also translated a considerable number of Nestorian works from Greek to Latin, actually very slavishly, so that his fellow monks could see the genuineness of, you know, what exactly the heresy of Nestorian was. So, of course, Nestorius was one who believed that Jesus was two persons, in a sense. You know, there was a human Jesus and a divine Jesus. And Pelagianism is a heresy where they deny that the existence of original sin. They don't believe that Adam's sin was passed on to his progeny, but rather what he did was he gave us a bad example. So we can be good, we can be heaven-worthy simply by being good, right? So somebody could be good and go to heaven without baptism or any of the sacraments, so to speak. So Pelagianism was, you know, that kind of developed around Augustine. Augustine knocked the stuffing out of it. And our early church father today, Marius Mercator, also did his part as well. So coming up on the other side of the break, we're going to be talking with Roy Shulman. You don't want to miss it. Stay tuned, everybody.
If you're a listener to Virgin Most Powerful Radio, you already know about Hands-On Apologetics with Master Apologist Gary Machuda. And if you're a fan of Hands-On Apologetics, then we have some exciting news for you. This February, Sensei Gary will be leaving the Apologetics Dojo in Michigan to visit the Virgin Most Powerful Radio World Headquarters in Covina, California. And if you'll be in Southern California this February, we have more exciting news for you. Not only will Gary be doing his live show from our Virgin Most Powerful Radio studio, but he will be giving a live presentation on February 20th at 7 p.m. right here at the Sacred Heart Chapel. That's Gary Machuda speaking live on the topic of Breaking the Bible Barrier, Why Catholic Appeals to the Bible Fail, and How to Make Them Successful. For more information, call 877-526-2151 or visit virginmostpowerfulradio.org. It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Hands-On Apologetics. And I'm very pleased to announce our next guest. We've been at least acquaintances, certainly friends over the years. And I love talking to him. And that is Roy Shulman. Roy was born in a suburb of New York City, conservative Jewish parents who had fled from Nazi Germany. His Jewish education and formation was received under some of the most prominent rabbis in contemporary American Jewry. He received his Bachelor of Science from MIT, MBA, magna cum laude from Harvard Business School. And midway through his career in teaching and consulting, and while he was appointed as part of the faculty of Harvard Business School, he experienced the unexpected and instantaneous conversion to Christianity. Since then, he has pursued theological studies, several seminaries. He's helped produce, host a TV show. He's also written and edited several things, including a couple of books that you definitely want to pick up. His book, Salvation is from the Jews, and Honey from the Rock, 16 Jews Find the Sweetness of Christ. He is also the host of Jesus, the Promised Messiah of Judaism, which, by the way, airs Saturdays, 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Maria Radio. Roy, welcome to Hands on Apologetics.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Boy, Roy, you know, I you have been on my list on the show for quite a while. I know many people are familiar with your story, but I wanted to present it on this program because, you know, sometimes we feel like God, you know, does God really care? Is he really active in the world? And I think your story shows, yes, indeed, he is very active.
Sure, I'm happy to, but I also invite you to, you know, interrupt at any point. It's your show with questions or clarifications or expressions of amazement or anything you like.
Oh, okay. Yeah, absolutely. I've learned that the less I talk, the better the show.
Yeah, I know that. I have a radio show, too, and it does tend to be true. But anyway, Well, your introduction was a very competent introduction. I was born and raised Jewish. My parents are both, they passed away recently, but we're both German-Jewish Holocaust refugees. My childhood was entirely Jewish. I went to Jewish religious education from the beginning of school years until university. In my late high school years, I became a follower of a charismatic Hasidic rabbi. The Hasids are, many of the listeners probably at least have a visual image of them. They're the Jews with the long ear curls and the black coats and are super religious, super observant. And I became his follower and actually lived and traveled with him in Israel for the summer between high school and college. But then I went back to the United States, began university, which is MIT, lost my faith there, came out of there essentially atheist. I don't know if anyone asked me whether I was an agnostic or an atheist at the time. I'm not sure what my answer would have been, but I certainly lost any, taking the existence of God seriously or really believing in him or in prayer or anything like that, or in the commandments, unfortunately, but that's another story. But a story which I suspect I share with a number of your listeners who went to university, but anyway, even if they were from Catholic backgrounds. But anyway, so I went on to Harvard Business School. I did, as you said, very well there, so they invited me back to join the faculty. I found myself a professor of marketing at Harvard Business School at the age of 29, and that's really when the bottom fell out of my world. Yeah. And the reason the bottom fell out of my world is that all my life I felt there has to be real meaning and purpose to life, and when I'm older I'll get to know the real meaning of life. As a child, I thought it would come from entering into a personal relationship with God, which I actually thought would happen at my bar mitzvah, which is like the Catholic confirmation, a ceremony in the synagogue where the child becomes a religious adult. And I really thought that that would be the breakthrough when I would come to know God personally, but then that didn't happen. Then, as I like to say, then I decided the real meaning and purpose of life would come when I got a driver's license. Or when I began, you know, university, or if I got into Harvard Business School, or when I began my career and so forth. But the problem was now I was already more successful in my career than I ever expected to be as a professor at Harvard. But life still had no meaning or purpose. I had, as I said, long since lost any belief in God. I thought we were, you know, a chemical accident, a bolt of lightning hit a puddle of amino acids 5 billion years ago, and somehow we crawled out. and a life has no meaning or purpose, then we die and that's it. And as a matter of fact, one of the things that bothered me the most, this may sound strange to Catholic listeners, but one of the things that bothered me the most was I couldn't think of any reason to be good. I mean, I still had a conscience. I still wanted to be good, but I couldn't think of any rational reason to be good if we were all just meaningless chemical accidents. You might as well exploit everyone inside and just look after yourself. Yeah. Anyway, so I fell into this despair at this meaninglessness of life now that there was nothing more I could look forward to that I might imagine might give my life meaning. And in that despair, I was walking in nature early one morning. It was actually in low pine woods just behind the sand dunes of the and then the beach on Cape Cod. And I was just alone in this beautiful nature and lost in my thoughts. And as I said, you know, at the time, completely atheist, when I received the spectacular grace that from one moment to the next, the curtain between earth and heaven disappeared, and I found myself in the presence of God, in very intimate communication with God, very intimate knowing of God, and seeing my life as though I would see it after I die in the presence of God, and looking back over my life and seeing everything that I would be happy about and everything I would wish I had done differently. I saw a tremendous amount of theological truths in this experience. It's hard to know what verb to use because it was actually seeing, and yet they were truths that I was seeing. They weren't images that I was seeing or pictures, but nonetheless, it was seeing. And I saw how I would feel about everything after I died. I saw that we live forever. I saw that every action has a moral content that is recorded for all eternity, that every action, the moral content is weighed in the balance. And every time we take the opportunity to do something of value in the eyes of heaven, we will be rewarded for that for all eternity. Every opportunity we let slip will be a lost opportunity for all eternity. I saw that a lot of these things are hard to describe, needless to say, but I was completely selfish in those days. My defense being that being a professor at Harvard Business School is actually professional training in selfishness. So I saw in this experience how foolish I had been putting all my time and energy into accumulating things that wouldn't do me any good at all, even 100 years later after I was dead, when if I want to be smart and selfish, the only thing that made any sense would be to put all of my time and energy into accumulating essentially treasure in heaven, merit for heaven, for which I would literally be rewarded for all eternity. I would be benefiting for all eternity from every incremental little thing that I did of value in the eyes of heaven would be that much more benefit to me, not just for 100 million years, but 100 million years isn't a drop in the bucket of eternity. And so even though I was still selfish at the time, I saw that the only thing that made sense would be to essentially work on my heavenly bank account instead of my earthly bank account. I saw in this experience, I also saw the truth of divine providence. I saw that everything that had ever happened to me had been the most perfect thing that could be arranged coming from the hands of this all-knowing, all-loving God, not only including those things that had caused the most suffering at the time, that I had thought of as the greatest disasters at the time, but especially those things that had caused the most suffering at the time. And by the biggest aspect of this experience, the most transforming aspect of this experience, was coming into the absolutely full and intimate knowledge of God's very personal love for me and involvement with me. I saw that not only had he controlled absolutely everything that had ever happened to me to be the most perfect thing that could be arranged, but he not only, of course, knew me by name, but he was watching over me and caring about me and doting on me as though I were the only creature he had ever created, and had his ear, so to speak, pressed up against my lips to hear the faintest murmuring of my lips or my heart. He not only was controlling everything that happened to me and knowing everything that happened to me, but he knew how I felt at every moment and cared about how I felt at every moment, such that everything that made me sad made him sad, and everything that made me happy made him happy. And this was the God who created the universe. This is the God without whom nothing could exist. And he was so, I don't want to say revolving everything around me, but was so concerned with my welfare and concerned with how I was feeling and so immersed in love for me. That was absolutely revolutionary for me. Now, cradle Catholics have a lot of advantages over cradle Jews, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And one of them is that, at least in principle, Catholics are taught that God knows you by name, that Jesus knows you, that Jesus cares about you, that you are a real person to God and to Jesus, which is, of course, same thing, but that's another, that's for you, that's another show that's too deeply theological. but that is not the relationship between God and man that Jews are taught or know, and it's not the relationship between God or man that is in Judaism, and it's not even the relationship between God and man that's in the Old Testament.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, we should actually do a show on that, because I know Scripture is like, you know, is your mother load. But
yeah,
it's not only that the picture of the God in the Old Testament is so different. The God in the Old Testament certainly appears as much more distant, much more severe, much more judgmental, so to speak, than the God that we know of since Jesus came. But it's actually, more interestingly, the fact that the relationship between God and man was different before the incarnation, before Jesus came. That's one of the reasons for the incarnation. One of the Old Testament prophets, I think it's Joel, said, the Lord says that the day is coming when you won't have to run to this person and run to that person and say, tell me about God, but I will make myself known to the lowliest manservant and maidservant. And that prophecy was quoted by St. Peter on the first Pentecost Sunday sermon that he gave. That really happened. In other words, in the days of the Old Testament, in the days before the incarnation, God did not reveal himself to the ordinary person. He only spoke through the prophets and the priests. And the intention was always that with the incarnation, the relationship between divinity and humanity would become far more intimate. The relationship between God and man would become far more intimate,
yes.
Which happened, of course. And so...
Right.
I'm getting a little bit off track, but basically, here I am in this experience. This entire sense of God is entirely new.
Well, hold on.
And we'll have
Roy, I hear the music. I have to interrupt you because we're going to get to a break. I'm sorry. When we come back on the other side of the break, I want you to start with that. Okay. You're listening to Hands On Apologetics. Stay tuned.
If you're a listener to Virgin Most Powerful Radio, you already know about Hands-On Apologetics with Master Apologist Gary Machuda. And if you're a fan of Hands-On Apologetics, then we have some exciting news for you. This February, Sensei Gary will be leaving the Apologetics Dojo in Michigan to visit the Virgin Most Powerful Radio World Headquarters in Covina, California. And if you'll be in Southern California this February, we have more exciting news for you. Not only will Gary be doing his live show from our Virgin Most Powerful Radio studio, but he will be giving a live presentation on February 20th at 7 p.m. right here at the Sacred Heart Chapel. That's Gary Machuda speaking live on the topic of Breaking the Bible Barrier, Why Catholic Appeals to the Bible Fail, and How to Make Them Successful. For more information, call 877-526-2151 or visit virginmostpowerfulradio.org. It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
This is Jesse Romero. You're listening to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda on Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. We are talking with Roy Shoman. For those who are just joining us, he's telling us his story. Roy grew up in a conservative Jewish home. He was instructed by prominent rabbis, and while he was succeeding in the world, he lost his faith. And he was telling us about a walk he had in the woods where he had this incredible experience of God. Not only did he realize all his moral actions were not meaningless, but actually had eternal ramifications, and also that God's intense personal love for him. So, Roy, at that moment, did you accept Yeshua HaMashiach?
I didn't know it was Jesus. As I was saying before the break, the picture I had of the God of Judaism was very distant, was very different from this intimate God that was revealing himself to me. But I did understand from this experience that the meaning and purpose of my life was to worship and serve obey my Lord and Master and God who was revealing himself to me. And all I wanted to do was know what his name was and what religion to follow in order to do it properly. So I prayed on the spot as I was walking, let me know your name so I know what religion to follow to worship and serve you properly. I don't mind if you're Buddha and I have to become Buddhist. I don't mind if you're Krishna and I have to become Hindu. I don't mind if you're Apollo and I have to become a Roman pagan, as long as you're not Christ and I have to become Christian. I very literally prayed that.
Yes.
And I did not have any room for Jesus. And although he revealed himself to me, he did not reveal himself. I use the word Christ when I talk about that theophany. I don't use the word Jesus, because when I think of Jesus revealing himself or appearing, I think of the picture of Jesus, you know, with his long hair and his beard and, you know, in his humanity. He was revealing himself in his divinity to me. There was no human form, you know, associated with the revelation. So I knew he was God, but I did not know he was Jesus.
Okay. Yeah, so what was your next step? Obviously, you want to serve the Lord. Where did you go?
Well, I went back home. I was happy for the first time in my life, knowing there's never any reason to be anxious about anything, that absolutely everything that happens is perfectly arranged by this God who loves you more than you can imagine, and who is, of course, all-powerful, so there's nothing outside of what he arranges. I knew that we live forever. I knew that life has an infinite depth of meaning. I knew that every hour has the possibility of adding to our bank account in heaven and so forth. This is all incredibly good news. You talk about the gospel being good news, and this is all completely new to me because it was all absent from Judaism. So I was very happy. I just wanted to know his name. So every night before going to sleep, I said a short prayer I made up to know the name of my Lord and God and Master who had revealed himself to me that day. And a year after the first experience, I went to sleep. I thought I was woken by a hand on my shoulder and led to a room and left alone with the most beautiful young woman I could ever imagine. And I knew without being told that it was the Blessed Virgin Mary. When I found myself in her presence, all I wanted to do was throw myself on my knees and somehow honor her appropriately. I saw who she was. I saw her grandeur. I saw her, I don't know what the right word is, actually. Not exactly grandeur, not exact exaltedness, superhumanness in a sense, although that's not very, you know, kind of polite way to put it. But I saw how everything that flows from divinity into humanity flows through the Blessed Virgin Mary. I was overwhelmed by, she was perfectly beautiful, no question about that. But the biggest part of the experience was to feel the love that came from her And to feel the purity and intensity of love that came from her was to be lifted up into a state of ecstasy greater than I ever imagined could exist, which I now think is very deeply connected with the bliss of heaven. And the first thing she said to me was she offered to answer any questions I might have for her. So I asked her about four or five, six questions, which she graciously answered. And then she said she had something she wanted to talk to me about, and she spoke for about another 15 minutes, and then the audience is over. And I went back to sleep. Now, I know, by the way, now I know that if there was a camera in the room, it would have shown me asleep in bed throughout this experience. But I thought I was awake at the time, and my memory represents it as though I was awake. And the feeling, you know, I remember so clearly the feeling of being there and weighing different questions in my mind. And what about that question? No, that's stupid. What about this question? Okay, I'll ask that. You know, and I have a perfect word-for-word memory of the interaction, first part of the interaction, at least. And anyway, but the audience was ended. I went back to sleep. I was never dumb. The next morning when I woke up, I, of course, realized that this is the Blessed Virgin Mary, that was Christ, and this is all about Christianity.
Wow. Can you share, I'm just curious, what question came to your mind? I mean, I was just thinking, what would I ask the Blessed Virgin Mary if she appeared in my dream?
I answer, but I will also, I don't want to say put in a plug. I'm doing this, I hope, for the sake of your listeners. But we have some time constraints on the show. If anyone wants to hear a longer, more detailed version of my witness testimony, I have a number up on YouTube if they just look for my name. And I hate to say this, but it's easier to remember. If you go to YouTube and you look for Virgin Mary appears to Harvard professor, you'll immediately pop up my witness testimony. So that's probably the easiest way. Anything on YouTube that says Virgin Mary and Harvard professor together, you'll find it.
Yeah, that's not a very common thing to happen, is it?
I didn't put that up, by the way. I don't have that kind of gaudy self-marketing kind of approach, but someone else did, and it was very successful. It's had over a million views. So, but
thanks
anyway,
be to God. It's a good resource. Thank you for
it's a good resource.
It.
I also have a website, as long as I'm advertising myself, salvationisfromthejews.com, that has a tremendous amount of both audio and video and information about my books, and upcoming talks that I'm giving and everything. So anyway. I'll mention a couple of questions and answers. Some of the questions were dumb, some were personal, and most of the good ones actually just came out of being overwhelmed by her presence and who she was and wanting to honor her appropriately. So at one point I stammered out, and it was as much of an exclamation as it was a question. How can it be? How is it possible? How can it be that you're so glorious, that you're so exalted, that you're so magnificent? How can it be? And her response was just to look down at me almost with pity and shake her head gently and say, oh, no, you don't understand. You don't understand anything. I'm nothing. I'm a creature. I'm a created thing. He's everything. And then again, out of the desire to honor her appropriately, I asked her what title she liked best for herself. And her reply was, I am the beloved daughter of the Father, mother of the Son, and spouse of the Spirit. Those are the two best questions I have, so to speak.
Wow.
I'll probably stop there. The others go downhill from there.
Oh, well, actually, you know, I remember years ago you also mentioning about what prayer Mary loved the most.
Yeah, well, that was my first question to her. Because here I found myself in her presence. I was overwhelmed by who she was. I was overwhelmed by her love. All I wanted to do was honor her appropriately. My first thought that crossed my mind, and this is before she said anything, was I wish I at least knew the Hail Mary, but I didn't.
Right.
So when she offered to answer any questions I had, I kind of first wanted to ask, would you teach me the Hail Mary? But that would mean admitting I didn't know it, and I was too proud to admit I didn't know it. So as a kind of indirect way of getting her to teach it to me, I said, what's your favorite prayer to you? But instead of giving me a straight answer, some of her answers were a little bit sideways, by the way. Her initial answer was, I love all prayers to me. I was a little bit pushy, and I said, you must love some prayers to you more than others. And she did recite a prayer to Mary to me, but it was in Portuguese, and I didn't know any Portuguese. So all I could do was remember the first few syllables phonetically. And then later, when I met a Portuguese Catholic woman, I asked her to recite the prayers to Mary in Portuguese. And to the best of my ability, I identified the prayer as, O Mary, conceived without sin, pray for us who have recourse to thee, which, of course, is the prayer on the miraculous medal.
Yeah. Yeah, beautiful. Okay, we have maybe about two more minutes. Okay, so after the dream, what happened?
Well, I woke up that morning. I knew who the Blessed Virgin Mary was. I mean, really knew, in a very deep sense, as I said, the way she is the conduit between God and humanity. I knew it had been Christ in the first experience. I knew I wanted nothing but to be as fully and completely a Christian as possible. I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know the difference between a Protestant and a Catholic. So I just really opened the local phone book and started going to a local church, which is Protestant. But I knew who the Blessed Virgin Mary was. And as soon as I got to know the pastor a little bit, I kind of shyly asked him about the Blessed Virgin Mary. And when he answered without the respect that I knew that she deserved, I knew this is no place for me. And the other thing I was doing in those days was spending all my free time at Marian shrines, in particular a shrine to Our Lady of La Salette, which is not far from my house. And of course, the shrine was part of the Catholic Church. And so, and whenever I was there and their mass is going on, I was filled with this tremendous desire to receive communion. So that led me fairly directly to the Catholic Church, knowing who the Blessed Virgin Mary is and wanting to receive communion daily if possible. It took a couple of years, but I was pretty, directly targeted towards the Catholic Church.
Yeah, so in God's providence, because of that dream with Mary, led you straight to the church, in a sense. I mean, because
it saved a lot of detours.
Yes.
I mean, before that experience of Mary, obviously I wasn't as unwilling to hear that it was Jesus as I had been a year earlier, but, Jesus was way down on the list of who I would have liked God to turn out to be.
Right, absolutely. Well, I'm hearing the music. Coming up on the other side break, ladies and gentlemen, talking with Roy Shoman, and he's talking about his journey into the faith. And you don't want to miss it. Great discussion. Stay tuned.
If you're a listener to Virgin Most Powerful Radio, you already know about Hands-On Apologetics with Master Apologist Gary Machuda. And if you're a fan of Hands-On Apologetics, then we have some exciting news for you. This February, Sensei Gary will be leaving the Apologetics Dojo in Michigan to visit the Virgin Most Powerful Radio World Headquarters in Covina, California. And if you'll be in Southern California this February, we have more exciting news for you. Not only will Gary be doing his live show from our Virgin Most Powerful Radio studio, but he will be giving a live presentation on February 20th at 7 p.m. right here at the Sacred Heart Chapel. That's Gary Machuda speaking live on the topic of Breaking the Bible Barrier, Why Catholic Appeals to the Bible Fail, and How to Make Them Successful. For more information, call 877-526-2151 or visit virginmostpowerfulradio.org. It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Matuta. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
Welcome back, everybody. We're talking to Roy Shoman on his journey from conservative Judaism to the secular world to the Catholic Church. And Roy, I have a couple of questions for you. The first question is... When you had that experience of God, walking on that trail, if God revealed Himself as Jesus, would that have been a much more difficult thing to handle than just simply to know that there is a God who loves you and you know that everything you do is important?
All I can say is I was not ready to hear that. I know it would not have had a successful outcome. I don't know exactly where it would have failed. I don't know what my response would have been on the spot, so to speak, but it would not have worked.
Yeah.
I would not have bought into it.
Yeah, that always amazes me that God gives the proper grace at the proper time, you know. He's a good father.
Isn't it nice that he's just so smart?
Yeah. Yes. And like I said, he's a good father. He knows what his children can handle and what they can handle. My other question, too, is, you have a Jewish family, and also I'm sure your colleagues at Harvard Business School are pretty secular. This is a pretty intense conversion. I mean, what was their reaction?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, it was in a way worse than that because I was on cloud nine. You know, it was like falling in love. It was this, you know, incredible, yeah, euphoric honeymoon kind of response. So not only had I just had this kind of lunatic experience in their eyes, but I acted like a lunatic about it. I wanted to tell everybody, you know, this is the best news in the world.
Yeah.
So I basically drove them away. And, my best friend on the faculty was another professor there. I delightedly told him this, and, you know, it was just like this embarrassed, awkward silence. You know, he didn't want to offend me, but he clearly thought I was nuts. And basically the response was the same as it would have been if I had said, you know, a UFO landed in my backyard last night and took me up to Venus, and I met the mothership, and, you know, it's coming back tonight for me.
Right.
You know, just like what you do, you just kind of like try to be polite and get out of there as fast as possible.
Yeah, yeah. So you found God, and you found Jesus, and you lost, maybe not lost, but certainly there was some alienation of your closest colleagues.
Oh, no, I lost. I lost. Yeah. I mean, I lost, you know, everyone, everyone in my life, except if I tell the truth. I actually had accidentally one or two Catholic friends, and I actually didn't lose them. Don't ask me why, because they still didn't believe in the faith like this, but nonetheless, they kind of stuck around. but you know, again, it's like, you know, I think St. Thomas More said when he was in prison about to be executed, you know, for not taking the schismatic oath or whatever to Henry VIII, you know, he says, and his wife wants him to take the oath, right, and recant and save his life. And he said, look, you're a good businessman. What bad business is it to trade, you know, maybe 10 more years on earth or 20 years more years on earth for all of eternity? It's not very good business. It's the same thing. I was a, you know, Harvard Business School professor. It's not very good business to care about, you know, the next 40 years at the expense of the next eternity of years.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great point. So why don't we talk a little bit about what you did afterwards? I take it you eventually from the faculty. Is that correct?
Well, I lost all interest immediately, instantly, in teaching MBA, you know, Harvard MBAs how to make more money. This is such a huge thing. And again, that may be a disadvantage of being a cradle Catholic is it's really hard to understand how absolutely earth-shattering the truth is. But it makes everything else irrelevant. It makes everything else irrelevant. If it's true, everything else is fundamentally irrelevant. It's like St. Ignatius of Loyola says in his first, you know, Principle and Foundation, man is created to praise, reverence, and serve God our Lord, and by this means to save his soul. All the things on the face of the earth are created for man that they may help him towards this end, and they should use them as much as they can to help him on this end, and rid them himself of them as much as he can to the extent that they hinder him from this end. I mean, if this is true, life is very simple, and there's one purpose, which is to get to heaven and to get others to heaven. Everything else is a means to an end. So anyway, I'm preaching. Sorry.
No, go ahead. I enjoy it.
Where was I? So anyway, I lost interest in Harvard. I lost interest in the MBA program. Of course, I wanted to preach to the students, but that wasn't what I was hired for, you know. And my loss of interest and my no longer being on the same page was painfully evident all around. And things fell apart. I'll just put it that way. Things fell apart fairly quickly in terms of my faculty relationship or relationship to the faculty. I did still have clients, private clients, you know, being a Harvard Business School professor, you get, you know, consulting basically. Mm-hmm. And I supported myself actually for most of the next 20 years off of leftover occasional clients from my career at Harvard Business School. And meanwhile, I was spending virtually all my time, except for the few weeks a year that I was doing consulting for these clients, in prayer, on pilgrimage, and you know, at monasteries and exploring religious vocations.
Yes, yeah, and probably during that period, that's when you wrote Salvations from the Jews.
That kind of was the end of that period. That's right. I was fermenting for about 10 years. And Salvations from the Jews burst out of me, much to my surprise. It got published miraculously by Ignatius Press. I became a bestseller. I was invited to speak on EWTN, or rather to be on EWTN Live and, you know, all the EWTN shows. And then I was asked to speak in different places, and, you know, I wrote another book. And so it was actually, yes, I was just... I don't know what you call it, but I was just kind of like fermenting, hidden for those 10 or 12 years. I wrote Salvations from the Jews, and then it kind of launched my ministry career or whatever I should call it, right, which I still don't know what I should call it.
Well, it's definitely not a miracle it was published. It's a fantastic book. I recommend both of your books to anybody interested.
I agree with you. It's a fantastic book. I can say that because I don't think I wrote it. I mean, I was, you know, it wasn't exactly automatic writing, but it was very direct inspiration. However, it was a miracle that Ignatius Press spent the editor's time in reading the manuscript, which just came in the mail from a nobody with no qualifications. They must get dozens of those a week, and they don't have the time to read them all. So that's the miraculous part. Once they read it, it was... Yes, it was logical that they should choose to publish it, but that they actually took the manuscript seriously enough to give it a read is I still think, a miracle.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And also, I really love Honey from the Rock, 16 Jews Find the Sweetness of Christ. Now, you know, obviously, you didn't, I'm sure you didn't know about Jewish converts or... you know, these past Jews who came into the
I didn't know about them at the time of my conversion, but remember, there was about at least 12 years between these experiences and when I wrote Salvationists from the Jews. Mm-hmm. And I spent those 12 years basically in religious study. I mean, self-directed to a large extent. I did spend some time at a couple of seminaries, but mostly self-directed. And I, you know, I'm kind of an intellectual / academic by nature, so I did a lot of reading and I learned a lot on my own.
Yeah, which one's your favorite of the 16 that you wrote about?
I, you know, obviously a little bit uncomfortable slash unfair, because there's no straight answer, but I'd say Herman Cohen in a lot of ways, because he was a secular depraved Jew, as I was, if I can say so. He was like the Mick Jagger of his day. He was this superstar, super celebrity musician as a teenager, with groupies, with the equivalent of millions of dollars, with being hosted by kings and queens, with an extremely depraved personal life. And he was actually conducting a choir at just as a favor to a friend. And the choir happened to be singing at a Sunday afternoon benediction service at a Catholic church. And when the Blessed Sacrament was lifted in the monstrance, he was forced to his knees and gushing forth tears, seeing the sinfulness of his life, seeing the love of God, seeing all of that in the presence of the Blessed Sacrament, and essentially instantly on the spot had this tremendously profound conversion. And he ended up as a Carmelite monk and priest. He reinstituted the Carmelites in England. He reestablished the Carmelites in England. All of the monasteries had been suppressed and expelled, and he reestablished them. He set up Eucharistic adoration, chapels of perpetual adoration in numerous towns in Europe. And he died as he took the name Augustine Marie of the Most Blessed Sacrament. He took a vow never to preach without extolling the Blessed Sacrament, and he was a martyr of the sacraments, because the way he died was he was in a POW camp as the chaplain, and there were prisoners dying of, I don't think it was smallpox, but one of those instantly fatal diseases. They needed extreme unction, and he couldn't find his little silver spoon, so he gave them the extreme unction with his finger, knowing that he had a cut on his finger and was liable to contract it, and he died a few days later of it. Wow. So he actually was a martyr of the sacraments. So it's a very beautiful story. It's one of the stories in Honey from the Rock.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Well, I can't believe time's already gone. Roy, what's that website where people can get a hold of information from you?
Salvation is from the Jews, all one word, .com. So that should be easy to remember. That's from John 4:22, the standard translation. Salvation is from the Jews. So I didn't make that up. Jesus made it up.
Very good.
Take it.
All right. And, well, thank you so much, Roy.
Anyway, you can find more than you want about me on my website.
Yes, absolutely. And there will be links on my website. Also, just go to Hands On Apologetics Live. And you guys can get a link to Roy's site. All right. Thank you, Roy. Coming up tomorrow, we're going to have blue-collar apologist John Martinoni. And it's time for me to turn off the lights here at the Apologetics Dojo. Coming up next, one of my favorite programs for high-intensity Catholic talk radio, the Terry and Jesse Show. Don't want to miss it. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I appreciate it. And, God bless. Bye-bye.
In the 1990s, I lived and worked in Hollywood. But when my wife Betty's mom took ill, we relocated to Orange County. And it was during this time in our lives that I converted to Catholicism. Once my eyes were opened to the truth, I couldn't learn enough about the faith. But I had less free time than ever, especially with a long commute. That's when I discovered the real value of Catholic audio. Listening to cassette tapes transformed my daily commute into a miniature retreat. And that's the beauty of Virgin Most Powerful Radio today. Since the podcasts are archived, you can listen anytime on our smartphone app. I know how listening to Catholic audio can bring you closer to Christ and His Church. So I encourage you to visit the App Store or go to vmpr.org and download the app today. It just might change your life. I'm Matthew Arnold for Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.